Utaftet Zayin. We're up to Si'if Katan Yud, V'Hashoel. He's commenting on the line in the Nishmat Avram that talked about Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos and said, here we go. Here, please take seats. That a Shoel, if somebody, there's more paper to give out here. The line in the Sefer Hasidim said, V'Hashoel, that someone who asks a shayla regarding whether to act to save a life on Shabbos or not is shofech damim, is considered to be a shedder of blood. The anishal, and the one who is asked the question, hareze meguna, is disgraced. So on that, the Nishmas Avram at the bottom of page Tavtet Zayin. I think that was the last of my Tavtet Zayins. Yeah. I have Tavyud Zayin when we switch pages, but right now that's what I have. So he writes, Vashoel. So under that, Shabbat. Koseva Mishnah Brura B'Shem HaRadvaz. The Mishnah Brura writes, quoting the Radvaz of David Ibn Abi Zimra from the 15th century, I believe. Perush. Oso Ha'ish. This person who asks the Shaila, should I act on Shabbos to save a life or not? Hu Mischaseid. V'yarela chalalas hashavas becholek hazeh kiim al yedei moreh. This person that we're talking about acts in a pious way. He says, I'm going to be righteous, and I am afraid to violate Shabbos for a patient like this unless the rabbi is going to tell me that that's what I ought to do. So he says, harayu shofech damim, that's murder. Sheba'ot shu holech lish'ol yechlash hachola yosef yuchal lihistakein. Because while you're going to ask the shayla, the patient's going to potentially weaken and be endangered. The pasuk says, don't stand by while the blood of your brother is shed. Ubi Yerushalmi Isa, and the Yerushalmi then continues the thought and says, Hanishal hareze meguna. The one who is asked the question, meaning the rabbi, is a disgrace. It's disgraceful for that this happens. What do you mean? Perish. Meaning, Mishum Shah Tamachacham bimakoma wahaya lo lidrosh repirkalakol. Because the Tamachacham, in his locale, ought to have taught everybody the rules publicly. That everybody will know in advance. And they won't need to ask him the question. So, clearly, this isn't something that you accomplish with a one-time statement in a drasha. You know, making a one-time statement in a drasha of, I want to make sure everybody is aware, we have to violate Shabbos in order to save lives, that actually is, as we've already seen earlier in the Nishmas Avram, that is called fulfillment of Shabbos, don't hesitate. Saying it once is worthless. Not worthless, I shouldn't say that. But it doesn't accomplish the goal. It requires repeated announcements, and, as we've talked about, it requires outlining situations for people. It's something that we've seen, meaning because there are gray areas, because we don't know as lay people what we're supposed to do, the reality is that you hear the rabbi say, break Shabbos to save a life, and you think, okay, but does that apply in this case? I don't know if this person needs it or not. They fell down the steps. They're able to tell me what day it is. So, what's her concussion? Do I know? Is there any swelling? What do I know about whether they're in danger or not? So, it's worthwhile. I think that as part of this, when he says the rabbi has to make sure to be dorish in the pirkei, he has to teach it in the shir, it means he has to talk about particular situations in order to give people a sense of confidence that, yeah, this is the right thing for me to do. If someone falls down the stairs and they bang their head, you should be going to the hospital, and so on. That sort of thing, which, you know, requires sitting down with a doctor to figure out, so what are the rules? Inventing it isn't good.
He should be holding shiurim like this.
V'im ha'chola ba'atzmo. And now the third point that the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Radvaz. V'im ha'chola ba'atzmo misyarei she'yavru alav es ha'shabbos. If the patient himself is afraid that they're going to violate Shabbos for him, he says, I don't need it, I'm fine, I'll wait till after Shabbos, it's only a few hours. Kofen oso umedabrim alibo shu chasidus shalshtus. So we force him, and we explain it to him. The daber alibo means to try to persuade him that this is a foolish piety. Now, there's a limit to what you can do in terms of forcing somebody, meaning you can't really compel somebody. You need their cooperation. So you have to try to convince them. I didn't bring them on the sheet because they basically all say essentially the same thing. And so wrote the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. If the patient does not want it, we force him. He says that is called a foolish piety. He is called a foolish, pious person if he refuses to be treated for a particular prohibition, because of a particular prohibition. V'olav Namar, and regarding this person, the pasuk says, V'ach es dimchem l'nafsho zechem edrosh, I will seek your blood for your lives, meaning you are responsible for the fact that your life was lost. This fellow is essentially ending his own life. Ulam, but then he continues to say something that we already spent some time on several weeks ago. Ulam ba'inan shtei refua harefua yidua o al pimumcha. The treatment has to be a known treatment or something recommended by an expert. We talked about what that means and said it depends on the person who's actually doing the treatment being an expert, or the people who are doing the treatment, who are on the scene, aren't necessarily experts, right? Somebody collapses and doesn't have the good fortune of to have collapsed near a doctor. So they're lay people, but it's a known thing. That's good enough to warrant doing this on Shabbos. Vigam, as well as one other key factor, shizmanu bahu, shehu misukan gadol v'chol rega chashuv etzlo. It has to be a situation in which the things have to be dealt with hastily. Not hastily in the sense of irresponsibly, but in the sense that the person is in grave danger and every moment is significant. Then there's no question. There's no response. We do everything possible. We do not sit there and examine how we can minimize what you're doing. We treat Shabbos like a weekday. But if, you know, if it's not that kind of a case, if time is not precious, there is time to treat him, so then good. So you ask whatever questions you want to ask. V'kosev ha-matei Ephraim. And now the Matei Ephraim turns to the rabbi and he says, Yesh lo lemora liyos dinim elu shgurim b'fiv. The rabbi should be an expert in these things. To be shogur b'fiv means that he can just spit out the information. That's the idea. The term shin gimel resh is an Aramaic root that refers to either throwing something or putting something down a chute. So it has to be something where he could just respond smoothly. Such that he won't need to pause to examine his books. And if a question comes up, does everyone have a tough Yud Zayin? And I have a spare of those. If a question comes up and the rabbi does need to examine it, needs to take time, let's say there's somebody else standing there who is a sage, who is an expert, and he says, yeah, I know what you're supposed to do in this situation. You're supposed to feed him, assuming it's Yom Kippur. Or you're supposed to do whatever it is that's needed at that point, and maybe feed him in a certain way. Ein lo lachlo kavod l'rav l'hamtin ad sheyashiv. The person who is standing there is not allowed to say, well, out of kavod for the rabbi, I'm not going to say anything. Meaning, there is a rule normally that you're not allowed to issue a halachic statement in front of a posek. It's his responsibility and it's his honor. And in the event that you do that, that's actually considered to be a serious crime. However, in this case, a person's life is at stake. So you don't have the right to say, well, I'm going to keep my mouth closed. Ela omer hu l'hashoal hatshuva miyad mishum pikuach nefesh. You respond immediately. And notice the way he words it. You answer the person who asked the question. You could have expected a more conservative approach. Turn to the rabbi and say, Rabbi, I think I know something about this, and do it that way. He says, no, answer the person who asked the question. He wants it done directly. Okay. He then continues, Yom Chol. This is a quote from a section in the Shulchan Aruch you don't have in front of you, but it's that same section in which he had said that you treat that you automatically go and here I might actually have it here. Oh no, I see why. That's not the quote. Yom Chol was because on the previous page when he started discussing the case of somebody who needs help but not to ask a shayla and so on, he said Shabbos. So now he's saying Yom Chol. Switching gears from the Shabbos situation to a weekday situation. What if someone wants to ask the shayla during the week? Right? The doctor says that they should amputate something. The doctor says they should take a certain medicine. And the patient is wondering, maybe I shouldn't. Right? Maybe you have a situation in which there's somebody who's having terrible, severe anxiety attacks. And the doctor says, look, we really need you to start on this medication. The patient is scared. And he says, well, I don't know what that's going to do to me, to my personality, whatever. I want to talk to my rabbi. So he writes, Upashut mikal v'chomer. He says it is simple, just logically. Shegam biyom chol ein makom l'she'elas chacham b'chol sheyesh bo sakana o safek sakana. He says, there is no room, even during the week, to ask a shayla if you're dealing with somebody who's dangerously ill, or possibly dangerously ill. V'asur b'chol ha'kazel hisma mea o l'haseis l'kachas osa miyad l'cheder miyun. Mitam safek kolshu o mishum osas ksafim no chiyudu k'dome. He doesn't even deal with my case. He's dealing with other reasons for delaying. He says, it is prohibited for such a patient, in a case that could be dangerous, to delay, to hesitate, to go to the emergency room because of some doubt, whether the doubt is because, well, it's going to be expensive, or whether it's inconvenient. Kol she'eino borur she'efshar bivados l'chakos ad she'yiftach ha'shipatach ha'mirpa'a o she'imtza rofei bein bayam uvein balayla. He says, as long as it is not clear that you can afford to wait until the clinic opens or until you find the doctor, then you go. That's his statement. And it's true. It's a very funny thing. There are people who, on Shabbos, know the rules. On Shabbos, they know you go to the hospital. But something happens during the week, and it's like, well, I don't know, maybe not. The rule of v'nishmartem ma'od l'nafsho seichem, that you have to protect your lives, is not Shabbos specific. Right? It's an all week long rule, and that's his point. And remember, who's writing this? Rabbi Dr. Abraham is a career emergency room physician. He has seen this before. You know, the people who didn't go and then they show up and it's, you know, they could have gone there hours ago and they would have been a lot better off. He's seen it over and over again. Okay. That concludes that discussion. We now shift gears. If you look at the top of the page, Si'if Gimel. He says, right at the top, yes. This is the Shulchan Aruch he's quoting at the top of the page. Kol maka shel chalal. Okay, maka shel chalal literally means internal wound. Okay, chalal is a term used in modern Hebrew to mean what? In modern Hebrew uniquely, chalal means space, right? Like outer space. But it means a cavity of any kind. So kol maka shel chalal, any internal wound. Dehainu mehashinayim vilifnim, meaning from the teeth and inward. Vishinayim atzmam bichlal, including the teeth themselves. Mechalin aleha es haShabbos. You would violate Shabbos for it. And we have to talk about why that is. Why is it that anything internal automatically requires violation of Shabbos? But the answer seems to be, if I remember correctly, that a person who has an internal wound doesn't have the ability offhand to look at it and know dangerous or not dangerous. So the point isn't internal, external. The point is diagnosable or not diagnosable. That's really what we're talking about. So he said, but we treat it here in the Shulchan Aruch as anything inside. Mechal and Aleas HaShabbos, you violate Shabbos for it. V'davka sh'niskalkel achad me'ha'evarim ha'pnimiyim machmas maka obua ukayotze bozeh. We're talking not about any pain inside, just any internal pain. He says specifically where one of the internal organs has been damaged by a maka, was, you know, blunt trauma, some kind of force, or a bua. A bua is a boil. Boil or blister or something like that. The kayotze baza, things like that. Avo mechushim ein nikroi maka. If a person just has an ache, that's not called a maka. So in other words, a person says, you know, I have a sore muscle. That's not maka shachala, let's treat this on Shabbos. A person, you know, fell down the stairs. That's a maka shachala, where we'll say, okay, we better treat this. The Ramah writes, Haga, mihu, however, misha choshesh b'shinav umitzta'era lav lahotzi'o omer le'inu yehudi lahotzi'o. He says, once we say that pain does not qualify, it needs to have some kind of, you know, like getting struck or something like that, he qualifies that and says, if a person has a toothache and he's in great pain and he wants it removed, he tells the non-Jew about it, and the non-Jew will remove the tooth. So we have to talk about all of this, including that last point. So we begin first with his point about teeth. And he said, from the teeth and inward is called an internal wound. So looking at Yud Aleph on the bottom of the page, Mehashinayim, from the teeth, V'kol shekein hachanichim, and certainly chanichim. So what are chanichim? Don't say Bnei Akiva kids. So chanichim is usually rendered as the gums. Oh. There are multiple sources for it. I did a share a while back for the dentists on dentistry and Tanakh, Talmud, and Jewish history. So we talked about the different terms. It's very interesting to see that within Tanakh, and then augmented in the Gemara, you have terms for all the different kinds of teeth. So there's a term for the cuspids, there's a term for a bicuspid, there's a term for each of the, you know, the molars, and so on. But here, when he says chanichim, the general assumption is that it is gums. There is possibility of saying it's the palate based on one source, but I think he's talking gums here. And what he says is the teeth, and then and certainly the chanichim will be considered maka shel chalal. Misha chash bekeiv kal b'shein. What if a person has a light toothache? Al lo laso shum tipul b'shavas. He should not do any sort of treatment on Shabbos. Now, in footnote 156, he says, well, not exactly. See what I'm going to say later. And the reason why he says, see what I'm going to say later, I think, is because there is a discussion in the Gemara, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, regarding treatments which don't look like treatments. So, for example, a person has a canker sore. What's the classic way to treat a canker sore?
Topical.
Topical, but what would you use as your topical treatment classically? I'm not talking about in a medicine cabinet. Sorry? Salt water? Maybe. Mm. When I was growing up, it was some form of brandy, whiskey, something with alcohol in it, was what you put on a canker sore, right?
Not in my house. But
not in your house. In my house, they use Tanac. I knew that's what people say. Oh, you put whiskey on it, and it'll numb it. So the point isn't to recommend doing that. It's certainly not for children. That's not the point. The point is that if you have someone in such a circumstance where they have a toothache and they know that whiskey would numb the toothache, so they can't take the whiskey and apply it on the spot. That's clearly a medicinal treatment. But they could take a swig of whiskey in general, like anyone who drinks whiskey. I'm not a whiskey drinker. But they could take a shot glass, fill it with whiskey, swish it around in their mouth and swallow it, and that will be acceptable. Why? Because it's derech achila. It's the way people normally eat. It's not done in a way that looks like medicine, and indeed, it's a food.
Like whiskey, and you're doing it specifically for your teeth.
Doesn't matter, because people in general, I'm told, do enjoy it.
The question is: is this something that is individual, or something that is more general? If it's individual, you can claim that yes, if I don't like it, it's not my drink. But if it's a general food, because other people drink it normally.
Right. So it's general. It is general both sides, to be lenient and to be strict. Meaning that it's general in the sense that if you have something that you always do but nobody else does, you can't say, well, this is just normal conduct. It doesn't work that way. It's always gauged socially. It's gauged by the community. So I imagine, I don't remember for sure, but I imagine that in footnote 156, that's why he gives you this note to say, well, actually, when we say don't do any treatment, it's not necessarily true. There is this option.
So if you have a tube of oral base at home, which is a cream that put it over and protect it, you can't use that on Shabbat?
So there will be two issues in what you're describing. Issue number one, which isn't what he's talking about here, would be smearing. In other words, I don't know how that's applied. If it's applied by...
You're like toothpaste.
So that's... Yeah. But if it has the consistency of something that is not poured, so you have to squeeze out of the tube... Mm-hmm. And you are going to need to smear it like that so that you reduce it to a liquid consistency. That's a separate problem on Shabbos, and that is potentially even biblically prohibited. In the event that that's not the case, let's say it's something you just dab on it and just leave it there. So then you're at the issue that he's talking about here, which is the overarching prohibition against medicine, where we say that for light things, one isn't allowed to engage in medicine, like we've talked about any number of times, the concern about grinding and so on. And that's a rabbinic prohibition, which, with a more serious pain, the prohibition will be overridden. But if it's a light ache, wait till after Shabbos. That's what he's saying. So he says you should not treat in such a case. V'im, however, continuing after the footnote 156, V'im chala kol gufo machmas hake'ev, if his whole body is sick because of the toothache, right? And for those who have had a real toothache, they know what he's talking about. The point where he's bedridden, he can't go anywhere. Then muter l'chala all of us haShabbos b'yisurei d'rabbanon al yedei shinui. Then he would be allowed to violate Shabbos on a rabbinic level, such as being able to take medication, if he does it in an unusual way. So what constitutes an unusual way is something that really depends on what we're talking about as the treatment. Some things are easier to do in an unusual way than others, but it depends on what your therapy for it is. Ulam, im e asher, but if it's not possible to do it in an unusual way, such as, I don't know an unusual way to take a pill. Right? You're swallowing a pill. What's an unusual way to take a pill? We do talk about making it a non-eating act when we talk about taking a pill on a fast day. So they talk about making the water sour in some way or wrapping the pill in tissue paper, whatever. But I don't think that qualifies as shinui when it comes to taking a medication. That qualifies as making it not an eating act. That's not the same thing as making it a shinui. So what he says here is if you can't do it in an unusual way, they do it in a regular way. The person who is already so sick from this that they can't function, that's what he should do. And there he says, next line, v'chein muter lakachas trufot, and he's allowed to take medicine. Umuter lo b'sh'as hatzorech l'kabal kol tipul ayidei rofei nochri, and someone who's in this category can have any sort of treatment that is required from a non-Jewish doctor, non-Jewish dentist in this case. Now, this requires some clarification, which he's going to get to. Because when you're getting treated by this dentist, right, it isn't as simple as saying the dentist is going to treat you and you're not involved. When I go to the dentist needs me to turn my head this way or that way, open wide, close the mouth more, right? There are all sorts of things you have to do to help the dentist. So that's a problem, potentially, what's called misayeya, that you're assisting the dentist. So that he's going to get to in Yudalit. He's not there yet. So we've given it two levels. Number one, light toothache. Number two, chola kol gufo. His whole body is in pain. And then he gives a third category. Ulam, however, im sovel mikeivim chazakim biyoter. If he has exceptionally strong pains, kach sheyesh chashash shel daleket o mugla, such that there is a concern for daleket. Daleket is infection, right? Mugla is pus, right? So if a person is at that stage, or potentially at that stage, we don't know, but he's a type of pain that makes us think there's something wrong in the roots. Oem yesh nefichus bechani chayim, or there is inflammation in the gums. And I wonder if that's actually what he's doing here. The chanichim before that he mentioned, he meant to be the palate, and the chanichayim, he means to be the gums, perhaps.
You should say chanichayim.
What?
Yeah. You say chanichayim.
Yeah. Chanichayim. So it could be the chanichim before he really meant palate, And I remember reading when I did my research for the dental shear, the argument was that chaych is usually the biblical term for the palate. And that maybe chet nun chaf is an Aramaic version, because we find that in Aramaic, sometimes these two-letter roots from the Hebrew, or apparently two-letter roots, gain a nun in the middle. So, for example, isha in Aramaic is intita. The nun gets stuck in, where you go from ish to anashim. That's actually from the Aramaic. That nun that gets there, everybody asks, how is it that ish isn't ishim? How come it's anashim? And the answer is, because the nun gets thrown into the root, courtesy of the Aramaic. So maybe the chech becomes like that, chet nun chaf, and that would be palate then, and chalichayim, here are the gums. But in any case, he says, if there is an inflammation in the gums, so in such a case, va'afilu lelo ke'evim, even if he's not in pain, tzrichem l'chal es ha-shabbos l'fiat zarech, you have to do whatever is needed to violate Shabbos, to get treated, va'afilu v'isurei Torah, even violating biblical prohibitions, ki matzav kazeh, yachol yod misukan, because that could be dangerous. So if a person seems to have some kind of root infection, we do not let it wait. Now, let's say you go to the doctor, or I should say the dentist. You went to the dentist. Okay, you went to the dentist down the block, and the dentist said, this can wait till after Shabbos. So that it can wait till after Shabbos. Meaning, there is no chiyuv of go to the hospital. Because you know what they're going to tell you in the hospital? It could have waited till after Shabbos. So if you get the expert opinion, and the expert says it doesn't need it, then it doesn't need it. But go to the expert and actually have the expert take a look at it. Don't rely on your own feeling of, it doesn't hurt so much yet. Or, I can wait. You don't know whether you can. So that's the statement there. So we have three stages in terms of the teeth. Light ache, don't do anything other than the possible item that I mentioned that we'll see later on, that if it looks like eating, then it may be okay. The second possibility is the entire body is ill from it, so you could do a dirabanan, ideally in an unusual way, and you could take medicine. And then the third is if the person is suffering from exceptional pain, such that the point is not the pain. We already dealt with great pain in the previous category, but the point is that it seems to be an indication of infection, pus, whatever it is, then it's time to go get treated. Okay. And even with a del risa. Which brings us to Yud Beis. He said, Vishinayim atzmam in the Shulchan Aruch, that teeth themselves count as makashal halal. So here he has a little note, which I wanted to expand on a little bit, because it explains the Gemara. Machalas hatzaf dina. The illness of tzafdina, shemuva b'mishnah berurah, which is mentioned in the Mishnah berurah, lo barur li mativa. He says, I don't really know what tzafdina is, he says. So I did research on this at the time that I did the dental shear, different terms, dental terms, and found that it is a stomatitis, which doesn't in and of itself tell you anything, that's just the symptom. But stomatitis, it's an inflammation from mouth sores. But as it appears in the Gemara, there's a very interesting possibility for diagnosis. Take a look on the second sheet, the side sheet that I gave you, for the added sources. This is Sabdina. So, in source Aleph, you see that? In source Aleph that I brought you there, it's the Gemara in Yuma where this illness comes up. Rabbi Yochanan chashbit safidna. Safidna and safdina, you find both. You find them interchangeably. In the Yerushalmi, it's actually with a resh instead of the dalet. But Rabbi Yochanan had this safidna illness. Azal gabade ahimatronisa. He went to a certain non-Jewish matron who was known for curing these things. Avdalei milsa. She did something for it. Chamsha on Thursday. Umale Shabbos and Erev Shabbos on Friday. And Omar La, he said to her, B'Shabbos Mai, what should I do on Shabbos? Meaning, I would like to be able to apply this treatment on Shabbos. From which we understand that however, whatever this Tzafdina, Tzafidna thing is, it is bad enough that it would warrant violating Shabbos for it. And she doesn't want to tell him, and there's a whole story there in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah. But in terms of what it is, in terms of what this tzafidna thing actually is, I don't know why I brought the sources the way I did on the sheet. So you'll excuse me for a moment as I jump sources in order to. I see what I did because I was bringing different explanations for different parts of the mouth. Yeah, but I already went through it with you. No, the Beis and Gimel are about the Chech and the Chanichim and so on. So we already jumped that. We already took care of that. And Dalid, that you see there, that's the line. That's the problem when I work on these too far in advance. Dalid is the line in Shulchan Aruch that talks about being allowed to swish things around in your mouth. So let's take a look at that quickly because it's worth seeing. Hachoshish b'shinav. I'm in source Dalid. Hachoshish b'shinav. Someone who has a toothache, lo yigamea b'am chometz v'yiflot, should not swish vinegar around and then spit it out, because that is clearly medicinal. Aval megamea uboleya. But he would be allowed to swish vinegar around in his mouth and then swallow it, if that's something that's normal to do, gazentehe. Literally. Oh, metabo bo kedarko. Or he can dip his food in it. Right? He has some kind of a vinegar dip. So he can use it as a dip his challah in it, dip his salad in it, whatever he wants, and then put it in his mouth and eat. And that's fine. Mishnah Berurah commenting on that in source Hay writes on Lo Yigamea Bahem Chometz. Vahu Adin Yayin Saraf Gam Kein Dino Kamo Chometz. He said the same thing is true regarding Yayin Saraf. Yayin Saraf is
brandy,
whiskey, higher alcohol content is the point. Gam Kein Dino Kamo Chometz has the same status as vinegar. Ach, however, he says, the makom tsar gadol, if the pain is great, efshar lismoch v'yayin saraf to mutter lishhoso b'fiv, v'liv loa acharkach. He says, then he would allow you to keep the whiskey in your mouth for a while, and then swallow it, even though that looks more medicinal, because people don't normally drink whiskey by holding it in their mouth for a long period of time. Nonetheless, as long as in the end it's going to be swallowed, he's okay with it.
Means more way of eating as opposed to swishing.
Correct. So as it was to, right. So there are three acts really. One is to put it in your mouth and then swallow it. Two, to swish it around and eventually swallow it. And three, to swish it around and spit it out. So he doesn't want you swishing it around and spitting it out, because that is clearly done then just to get the topical application of the whiskey. He would prefer that the person just drink it. But swishing it around and drinking it is also okay if the pain is really great. Od Kasav, he then writes further, this is the Mishnah Berurah still in source Hay. Dehu Adin, he says, Dehu Adin de Aser Liten al Hashen, Negalach o Spiritos, Vesubin Chamin. These are foods that they in their day considered to be therapeutic in some sense, pain relieving in some way. The Subin Chamin is hot bran, some kind of an oatmealish thing. To call them Muchach Shahula Refuah. So he says you can't use those because that's clearly done for medicinal treatment. Imlo Dekoiv Leitua. So it's not an oatmeal, it's really the bran itself, because otherwise it would be food. Imlo Dekoiv Leituva, unless he has great pain, Shemitzdeir Kol Gufo, such that his whole body is ill. Al Yidei Yisrael Mutter Dafka Al Yidei Shinui. So if you're going to have a Jew do this, it can only be done in an unusual way. But the Chayadam concludes that if you can't do it with a Shinoi, you can't do it in an unusual way, do it even without the change. Do it in the normal way. Okay, that brings me finally to the source on Safidna. This is where that Rabbi Yochanan line from source Aleph belongs. And the Gemara of Avodah Zarah says, source Vav, my simne, what are the signs, what are the symptoms of this Safidna? So, rami midi bekachi umaisi dama mi beidari. When you put something in your gums, blood comes out from between the teeth. So those are the sores that we're talking about. Mi mai havi, and what causes it? Mi karire karire dechite ume chamime chamime desari. From the very cold wheat, or from the hot, you'll get it with hot barley. Umishayure kasada harsana, and from having the stuff left over at the end of a kasada harsana. Kasada harsana is a cup of fish. It was some kind of a fish sauce that they had. So if you drink the dregs of that, you get this. We still don't know what it is. And my avdale, what was the cure? And the Gemara goes on to ask that and so on. So what is this? One more clue. Source Zayin. Amar Rebbe, Chavivin Yisurin. Rebbe declared that the pain that he suffered, and we know that Rebbe dies out of a state of great pain, Rebbe Yehuda Anasi. So he says it's beloved to him. He accepts what he's suffering from. Kavil Alei Tleisar Shana, he accepted it for 13 years. Shis Bitzmirta, for 6 years he suffered from fevers. Vesheva Betziperna. And for 7 years he had this tzafidna. Like I said, sometimes it's with a dalet, sometimes it's with a resh. For 7 years he suffered from this. Some say it was 7 years of the fevers, and then 6 years of this state. So what we can combine out of these is that this is some kind of an illness involving mouth sores that are sensitive, that bleed, that it has some element of digestive cause, in the sense that they talk about associating it with people who have eaten certain foods, and that Rebbe had it, and we know the Gemara elsewhere in Bava Metzia tells us, actually no, it's on that page in Bava Metzia, that Rebbe suffered from bowel problems. So based on this, when I gave a shiur on this to the dentist, one of the dentists suggested to me that this is potentially a symptom of irritable inflammatory bowel disease. That was what you were going to say, Elsa?
Mm-hmm.
And I brought you a piece there from a Crohn's website in Source Chess.
Okay. Yeah. Like a bit of Crohn's, yeah.
So that's indeed a possible, as they write there. They talk about canker sores or aphthous ulcers as lesions associated with aphthous stomatitis or ulcers in the mouth. So that could very well be what Rebbe was going through. This Crohn's / irritable bowel, and in a day when they don't have the surgical options that exist or anything, like that.
Or the cortisone.
Yeah, they're not doing that either. So, you know, they're stuck. Okay, so that's just a side note on the tzafdina / tzafidna, but it brings us back into our discussion in Yud Gimel. How are we doing on time? Oh, we still have 5 minutes. The umitzta'er alav lahotzia. We said that if the person is in great pain and wants to have his tooth removed, so he can go to. Sorry, yes, we're back on the Nishmas Avraham page. V'afta mitchila mavur decholi shenayim mikri shel chalal, where it says yud gimel. He says, even though we already said that a disease of the teeth is called an internal one, and therefore you might have said, why do I need to go to a non-Jew to do this? I could have a Jew do it. Mikomakom eino mutar ha-hotza'a al yidei Yisrael, da-hotza'as ha-shein eina refua yidua. He says, the Shulchan Aruch says that you can't go to a Jew to pull the tooth. Why? Because it's not a known cure. Who says that this is actually going to make anything better, pulling out the tooth? Now, there's a lot to say on this. I'm going to hold it for next time so I can finish the paragraph, because you can't stop there. Ulam ha'idna, he says, but now, hotzas ha'shein ki refua yidua. Nowadays, he says, pulling a tooth is indeed a known cure. Umutaris afilu alide rofa yisrael, and therefore, if that's what's indicated, then you can go to a Jewish dentist and he'll do it. Kishu kovesh is a hechrechi mishum sakanas nefashos, assuming he says that this is necessary to save the guy's life. I need to be able to do the root canal. I need to be able to get to wherever the infection is. I have to pull a tooth in order to do it. I know nothing about dentistry. I don't know that there is such a circumstance. But apparently there is, or he wouldn't be talking about it, because he knows, he's up on the modern medicine. So in a circumstance in which the dentist says, I need to pull the tooth in order to be able to treat it, it's a dangerous situation, then we'll say, go to the Jewish dentist and let him do it. The Kasav Liagon of Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal. He says, Shlomo Zalman Orbach wrote to me, Choshvani de bizmanenu mutter afilum zerak safek hatzala. Kevin de bizmanenu ein shum sakana ba kiras sheni. Points to something which requires greater discussion, but basically what he says is, in earlier times, they had a separate concern with pulling a tooth. Not the concern of, is this necessary to treat the patient, but the concern of, maybe it's harmful to the patient to pull the tooth. You're actually damaging the patient by pulling the tooth. Maybe that in of itself carries great risk. So, Rosh Shlomo Zalman says, that's why the criteria was, only pull the tooth if you know that it's necessary. But in our day, he says, it's not dangerous to pull a tooth, it happens all the time. And therefore he says, as long as you have some sense that it might be needed to save the patient's life from this infection, you would pull it on Shabbos and you'd have a Jewish doctor, a Jewish dentist be the one to do it without a problem. I want to come back to that just to address sources, Tess and Yud on the sheet, God willing, next week. Okay? Next week, 7:45.